It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
And we're back. This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock. We had a little bit of a technical situation. We cut off our good friend Vin Soprenowicz. Vin, are you still with us?
I think we're coming up to, near the end of the hour, Barry.
Yeah, well,
everybody needs to get their ads in.
I know, but they did it a little early, and here I was waiting. I was going to give you the signal. I had it all planned, and it didn't work.
No problem. The books are available on Amazon. Send in the Waco Killers is the nonfiction essays. My novel is called The Black Arrow. Just go to Amazon, and you can't spell my name. No one can spell Soprenowicz. It does start S-U-P, but if you remember the titles, pick up the books on Amazon. Might find them interesting.
You know, I remember reading your book, Send in the Waco Killers, and literally it sent chills through my spine. And of course, you write in such a nice way that there's a lot of levity. You point out things, the ironies. But, man, it really had an impact on me. I remember sitting in a plane. We were actually flying down to Pennsylvania, where it was the first time I saw you speak. And my wife, she still laughs about it. The way you described something in your book, I think Broken Arrow, the way you described it from the podium was just really funny about the British being so amazed and perplexed as to why someone would fire upon their person.
Shooting at the officers' persons. It was not acceptable because it would leave the men with no officers and they wouldn't know what to do. So why would you want to kill the officers when you're fighting a war? It's just not gentlemanly.
Well, my wife just loved it, and she loved hearing you speak that night. And, of course, we were down there, I think, with the head of the AFL, or not the AFL-CIA. Who was it? The ACLU, Strassen.
Right. Strassen, I think, was the guest speaker that evening.
Yeah, I remember sitting right next to her at dinner, and we were talking. I was just getting my digs in accidentally, you know, because I thought she actually stood up for rights. But no, not that one.
The ACLU does some good work on freedom of speech issues. Here in Nevada, the ACLU has actually taken up some Second Amendment cases, the only affiliate in the country that believes in the Second Amendment, and none of them seem to be able to locate the Tenth Amendment. But they've done some good work, but, of course, there are pals on the left, and they're not consistent in their defense of constitutional freedoms. That's all too widespread.
Well, that's why I just wish we could get critical thinking and reasoning back in our schools so that people could weasel through. One of the big problems is you get these candidates and these elected officials who will do one thing that you like. Oh, they voted against them our little brown brothers from south of the border, one of these immigration things or some nonsense. And they like them for that. But then they hate them for everything else, and you never know which category do you put these guys into. Are they good guys? Are they bad guys? Joe Arpaio, he goes out harassing people. He violates all kinds of rights of people. We know him here personally in the sense that we see what he does, but then he has a public image that he's a harsh sheriff. He's America's toughest sheriff. So they love him for that, but they hate him for the cost, you know, all the people who die in his care and brutal treatment at his guards' hands. What do you do with situations?
Frustrating.
Yeah,
frustrating.
It is.
Try to get the gun nuts to accept drug legalization. Try to get the potheads to accept that people have a right to bear arms. You'd think they'd team up and each defend the rights of the other, but it doesn't always work. Doesn't usually work that way, unfortunately.
Well, and there you have it. Vin, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Barry.
Hey, we'll have you back, and we'll make sure we give you the 2 hours because you're worth it.
Have a nice weekend.
Thank you. You too. We don't have weekends. We have strong ends. And we'll be back with Nick Coons, a congressional candidate here in Arizona, on Ernest Hancock's Declare Your Independence.
Oh, come on!
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Live? Huh? Is it, what time is it? Oh, my God, I got to get to work. Quick, run out the door. No, good morning and welcome back. This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence, where we urge our audience, declare your independence. It's pretty straight up stuff, but it's something nobody can do for you. No one can give you your freedom, for instance. No one can make up your mind for you as to what you will accept as truth. Hopefully some semblance of life form has put upon you so that you actually can weigh things out for yourself. To help us do that, sometimes we need some great people to represent us. We need people who think like us, people who are of the same general mind. And of course, I think if you can get to a politician's principles, then you can find out pretty much how they're going to do anything so that you don't wind up with the Joe Arpaio syndrome, you know, half a Democrat, half a Republican, or John McCain or Juan McCain or whatever you want to call them. These guys are half in betwixt and between every kind of political philosophy, and it all comes down to their pocketbook and their influence as far as I'm concerned. But today we have with us a libertarian candidate from District 5. He's going to get in and change things. He's going to tell you how he's going to vote ahead of time because you're going to catch on to his principles. His name is Nick Coons. He's a small business owner, so he knows how to run things and how the system works and how it really slows down the small guy, which is where 97% of the jobs in this country come from, by the way. But it's the little guy who gets squashed by the big guys in government. His name is Nick Coons, C-O-O-N-S. You're going to want to remember that because watch this young man, because if he has the support of the libertarians, you're going to hear a lot about him. Nick, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, as you mentioned, I'm a small business owner. I've been in business for a little over 12 years now doing computer sales and service. And the main reason I decided that I wanted to get into business for myself is because I really like the idea of people pursuing their own rational self-interest. Because if you look at it this way, I mean, a lot of times people want to put restrictions on the economy or they want to restrict what people can do. But if people are allowed to go after their own self-interest, then it ends up having a side effect of benefiting everyone else in the community they live in. For instance, let's say that I decided that I want to make gobs of money. I want to have a lot of money later on. So the best way to do that is to get people to give me money. It's a lot easier than stealing it, a lot easier than robbing a bank. If I can get people to just give me money, that seems like a pretty easy way to go. Well, how can I get people to give me money? The best way to do that is to give them something of value. So what I do is I provide computer service for them. I provide value to the community. And if I were to want to get a lot of people to do that, then I would have to provide value to a lot of people. And so in the pursuit of my own self-interest of obtaining gobs of money, I'm doing this through mutually voluntary transactions, I'm benefiting thousands of other people where I live.
Well, and that makes sense. If you put out a good product, people will buy it, and you get your just reward for it. Well, let's talk a little bit about politics. A lot going on in Congress. You got to watch them hippie liberal Democrat Republicans out there. They're out there spending everybody else's money and not reporting their own on their taxes, which I just get such a kick out of because it's such a joke. It's you pay, I don't have to. So how would you go? Well, let's talk about Obamacare, health care. What do you think about all this stuff? Where would your vote go in Congress when you're looking at 1,200 pages that you're not allowed to read? Nobody knows what's going to happen. Nobody knows how to implement it. How are you going to vote on such a bill, or what would you say to rise in opposition?
Well, I'm sure I could probably find enough stuff just on page one that I would want to oppose and vote against that particular bill. But I would, in general, with healthcare, I would oppose anything that would create more government intervention in the system. You have to go back to healthcare and look at why we're in this position. I mean, the whole problem right now that people are up in arms about is healthcare is too expensive. It's too inaccessible. People can't get it. There's no problem with the quality of healthcare. We like the quality of care that we get. It's the expense. It's the cost. People are saying, saying, you know, I just can't afford this. And we have to look at why can't you afford it? What is it that the government did in the 60s with the FDA? What is it that they did in the 20s with the AMA? What is it that they did in the 70s with HMOs and providing, for instance, tax breaks to businesses but not to individuals? What is it that they're doing to insurance companies to make it so you can't go across state lines and buy an insurance plan that might be better than what's available in your state? It's government who that's doing things that's causing the problem. If we can roll back the stuff that the government's doing, we can solve these issues without government controlling anything, going more to a free market model.
Well, what would you suggest? How would we solve the problem?
Well, I would like to, for instance, I'd like to get rid of any boundaries that prevent someone from going across state lines. For instance, a lot of the state legislatures mandate certain things on health insurance coverage. In California, you have to have maternity care in your coverage. Not very good for me because I don't have any plans of personally getting pregnant, so I don't think I should have to pay for that. I would like to go and pick a la carte. So if I found, hey, there's a great health insurance plan in Utah, but legally I can't buy it. So I think we should be able to go across state lines and buy insurance from whomever we want. I also think that individuals should be able to deduct from their taxes from dollar one of all their expenses. I would like to see the licensing restrictions on physicians loosened so that people who are trained to do certain medical practices are able to do those things even if they're not necessarily licensed physicians. You don't have to go through 8 years of medical school to know how to set a broken bone. You just have to know how to set a broken bone. So you should be able to do those sorts of things just not without being licensed as a doctor.
Well, now, how would you feel about just a certification and then no license required for doctors?
Well, ultimately, that would be the goal. I would like to get rid of all the licensing requirements. I'd like to see a free market certification process, a voluntary one. I mean, if I wanted to go and put on my garage door Dr. Nick without any kind of licensing or anything like that, I should be able to do that. However, I'm not going to get any business because I have no education. I have no ability to show that, yes, I know what I'm doing. No one's going to trust their health to me. So we don't have to worry about people who are not licensed or not qualified, rather, practicing medicine on other people because, I mean, why would you go trust your health to someone who can't show, yes, I have the expertise, yes, I have these referrals for you? I would like a certification process, kind of like Underwriters Laboratory. If we could privatize the FDA and make them like a UL, I think that would cut prescription drug costs way down.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I happen to agree. I think Granny on the Beverly Hillbillies really was a doctor. Now, if you're silly enough to have her ad-libbing through your abdomen, then you got a problem. I can definitely see that, but I would opt, obviously, for getting government completely out of it. It's the three R's of libertarianism: revoke, repeal, and rescind. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's what I've always said they were. I like that phrase. But in any event, it would really, how would that help us? Now, I've talked to a lot of doctors because I will also be in this race. I'm running for the governorship. This is the first time I've actually mentioned that on the air. But plans are certainly ginning up, and this is one of the things we want to confront. And I would like to see getting government completely out of your health care. And when I say completely out of your health care, I mean completely out of your health care. Nothing to say about it. I would rather leave them with a certification, and that could be a government entity who would just certify that you knew how to be a doctor with the latest, greatest medical learning and knowledge under your belt. How would you feel about that?
As long as the certification process was voluntary, which I assume apply by certification, that you don't have to go through the process. If you do, then it's licensing. It's the same thing. But if it's voluntary, then I think that's a good way to go. I would like to see the government completely out of it as well. I think the process for doing that is to kind of notch backwards. I don't know if you introduced a bill that said government has no more involvement in healthcare, that would necessarily go anywhere, that anyone would read anything about that or know anything about it, or that you'd make any waves on it. I would definitely like to see that as an end goal. And if that's a good practice or a good strategy to use, then I would definitely go for that. But that is the ultimate goal: get government out of it completely.
Well, yeah, and see, for me, that just clarifies the issue. When people see that, because remember, we're dealing with a public that has also been lobotomized by the welfare school system. I mean, they don't have the literal capacity to understand when you get into the nuances. That's why it's much easier just to say, get them out. Just get completely out unless they harm someone, or if they harm someone by subterfuge, because you're going to find people who are going to say, well, you can't just have non-real doctors, because we all used to call chiropractors bad things, not a real doctor or a veterinarian, not a real doctor, those kinds of things. They're going to say, what about non compos mentis, which basically means, what about those people who cannot think for themselves? What about those people?
Well, generally, those people, I'm not sure, are you talking about people in comas or something like that?
No, people who are just idiots.
Oh, okay.
I mean, who saw the sign on your garage and said, hey, I'm going to stop in for an appendectomy.
Okay. I mean, generally, the idea of libertarianism is that everybody is best equipped to make their own decisions for themselves, that if we say that, you know, this person's an idiot, therefore I'm going to make that decision for them, we start really going down that slippery slope. Now I'm going to make decisions for everybody. Or I think that person's not necessarily an idiot, but they're making the wrong decision, so I'm going to supersede their thinking process and make that decision for them. I really don't think that's the right direction to go in.
So you don't know what's good for people better than them? What the hell are you doing in politics?
I know. It's tough. It's an interesting contradiction. You know, how is it that I'm running for office when I think government should be uninvolved in things? Yeah. So my goal here is to get government out of it.
Well, very good. Well, folks, we are coming up here on a break here in just, well, about a minute. Tell us what about some of your other ideas. Now, we're going to get into education's going to become a big thing. What about education?
Education, I'd like to see, just like healthcare, get the government out of it. I mean, the two things that government is most involved in is healthcare and education, I guess, other than the military. And those are the things that people have the largest complaints about. You know, we have a horrible education system. We're ranked a lot lower than many places around the world. If we could privatize a lot more of that or increase school choice or increase competition, we'd see benefits of that. And I think if people were able to move away from the public school system easily, the public school system would go down on its own, but not to the detriment of anyone, because everyone would be choosing a private system and they would enjoy it.
Very good. Well, I'm going to give you some ideas that I've got for education, because here in Arizona, we're not just toward the bottom. We are the bottom. Woohoo! We got Arkansas and Mississippi laughing at us, saying, hey, you got pretty lips, boy. And we'll talk a little bit more about this when we come back from the break. This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence, where we hope you really will.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Dr. Nick Riviera. Remember me?
Well, if it isn't my old friend, Mr. McCraig, with a leg for an arm and an arm for a leg.
There will be a life.
There will be a light, and you'll be able to see, and the clouds will part, and clarity will come into your mind if you just declare your freaking independence. Will you get with the program? This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence. And this, folks, means that you are in the right place at the right time. We're here with Nick Coons, a libertarian candidate for Congress. He's going to go represent us in the House of Representatives, and we wanted to talk with him a little bit about where he comes down on a few issues, and in order to make sure we can get it all in, just wanted to give him a moment to go through his philosophy. What, Mr. Coons, is the proper role of government?
Well, the proper role of government, if government is to exist, is basically the defense of individual rights, to make sure that – to protect people from the initiation of force and fraud, and that's it. And in doing that, they can't themselves initiate force or fraud. They can't say, we're going to steal money from you to create a police force to protect you from being stolen from. That would be kind of contradictory. So basically, that really is the only role of government. They are to protect you from murder, theft, slavery, violent crimes, but themselves not creating violent crime.
Well, very good. Well, what about the fraud part? I mean, government lies to us all the time. Well, that's all it does.
That's right.
It prints absolute wrong truths, or whatever you would call them, newspeak, I guess. What about that? What would you do as a congressman? What can you do to stand up and make me more free?
Well, I mean, basically getting rid of government restrictions. The reason government fraud is such a big deal is because they have the ability to force their to impose their will on everyone. If they were just this little, you know, entity that all they were able to do was to protect you from the use of force, if they engaged in any sort of fraud, it would be probably a minimal type of thing. It would be some it wouldn't be something that's going to have a major impact on your life. It's not like some congressman's going to write some bill and now it's going to oppress 300 million people, because they wouldn't have that authority. We just shrink them down back to the only ability to protect you from those sorts of things.
Well, you know, Vin, one of our previous guests here, Vince Brenowitz, very smart man, he was talking about outcome-based laws. Mm-hmm. When people say, and I see this all the time, because people, especially in law enforcement, they say, you know, if we knew where every single person was all of the time, then when there was a murder, it'd be easier for us to track them or to find out who it was and bring the culprit to justice. Isn't that what you want? What would you say?
Well, we definitely want to bring people to justice, but I don't think that's worth giving the power to know where everyone's at, because if you are able to track everyone and you know exactly where they're at, you're not going to have some benevolent person sitting there at the controls figuring out, you know, what's going on, or just monitoring everyone and saying, I'm only going to use this for that one purpose. That benevolent person doesn't exist, or if they exist, they lose their benevolence once they get into that position of power.
Well, yes, sooner or later, a government worker is going to find a way to make money on the side mm-hmm. on that same information. Otherwise, they would have used the naval tracking systems on the O.J. Simpson case,
mm-hmm.
because there is literally a camera focused on every square inch of the United States at all points, at all times. All they have to do is back it up to the quadrants and see what happened to that truck. Did he show up in Nicole's parking lot or not? And they never tell people that, and they never use it for those beneficent ends in order to solve the crime of the century.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't do it. Why would you figure they wouldn't use the technology that we have in order to put an end to the myth?
The myth that we
couldn't find out what actually happened at Nicole Simpson's condo.
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, trying to get into some of their heads, I think that seems like a kind of a chore. There's a lot of irrational ways that people in politics and bureaucrats think, and you know, trying to decipher that, being a rational, logical person, that's really a challenge.
It's almost like it's opposite think. Mm-hmm. It's to throw you off or something. Well, we definitely want to get your views on the welfare school system, and you generously call them a public system. I'm not so generous, because I think that's one of the greatest threats that we face is a dumbed down society. And it's not to say our children are any less intelligent than our generation. It's they are not being exposed to either the truth or the complete information. And that disturbs me greatly, because this is my retirement program is the next generation. I want them to be 10 times smarter than I could ever hope to be and look at the progress of the child rather than preserving the administrative process of education. And it depends on where your focus is. So what is, if you had one single focus, what is it? What's your basis? Why you? Why should we vote for you? And what made you stand up for it?
Are we talking about education specifically?
Why are you running?
Why am I running? Well, because I want to get the ideas out there that what libertarians stand for. I was actually talking with a potential Republican opponent who, of course, they've got their primary because they've got like five or six people that run all the time. And I was talking with him, and he says, you know what? I like what a lot of things that libertarians stand for, but you guys have a really tough issue when it comes to morals. Because they're on the Christian right, they think that they're the moral high ground.
And we're going to leave it right there, because they're going to cut us off. There's nothing we can do about it. Network's bigger than we are. We'll be back right after the break. This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence. Yeah.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
I, me, mine. You know, it's all about me. It's all mine. Leave your grubby mitts off of mine. You were going to finish a thought. We're here with Nick Coons, a libertarian congressional candidate you're going to want to pay attention to, folks, because he's going to be one of your options. And if you're going to vote for people, Don't tell me that you got to vote for these guys who have a chance of winning and all that nonsense, because, come on, the vote is fixed. Or at least I'm convinced the vote's fixed. So you're just kind of weeing, as the president would say, wee-weeing into the wind. And I just, these guys. I love this political correctness. And I love the way one guy put it, talked about being politically correct, which I really try not to be. But he said being political correct is advancing the notion that you can pick up a piece of poop from the clean end. I thought that was a good way to put it. But let's let you finish your thought, what you were just talking about.
Well, I was talking with one of my Republican opponents in District 5, and he said, you know, I like a lot of the ideas that the Libertarians put out there, but it seems that they always have a problem when it comes to moral issues. And because, you know, him being on the Christian right, they look at everything from that perspective. And I said, no, I don't think that's the case at all. I approach everything from a moral perspective. I don't think that it's okay to steal from anyone or to kill them or to enslave them. To initiate force against them, to use violence against them. I don't think it's okay to be the aggressor ever. And so I approach everything from that perspective. And basically what that means is I don't agree with any sort of taxation. I don't agree with any sort of forced service or anything like that. And that really is a moral position.
It sure is. And what they think, the theocons is what I've coined them as. And now, don't get me wrong, folks, because, you know, half of our party, I don't know, maybe whatever they are. But I happen to be a Christian. And my belief is you ain't going to shake my belief. I know the old boy upstairs. And we're the first ones to scream about separating church from state. And people say, how can you do that? But you're a Christian. They see it as a way that we can use the lever of power to get what we think people should be doing. But that's where libertarians get off and say, no. We're the hobbitses of the world. What we do, we want to get that ring of power. We'll risk our lives. We'll risk our fortunes. We'll risk our honor. Get that ring of power. And people go, wow, you want the ring of power? Yeah, we want to throw it in the depths of Mordor. We want to destroy it. We don't want it to use it. We want it to throw it away so that you can be free. Because as we all know, there's no degree of freedom. You either are or you are not.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people who call themselves Christians don't, you know, I think the idea of being a Christian is to live a Christ-like life, to follow the teachings of Jesus. And if you look at the stories in the Bible, then, you know, Jesus used his abilities of persuasion and reasoning to try and get people to do what he thought was best for them. He enumerated the consequence. He said, this is what's right, this is what's wrong. If you do what's wrong, this is what will happen to you, but ultimately the choice is yours. I don't recall any chapter, book, or verse in the Bible where Jesus pulled a sword on someone and said, no, you will do it the way I think is right. He said that everyone should be has free will to make their own choice and that they just have to accept the consequences of their choices. So if you're going to live a Christian-like life and you're going to live like Jesus, then you have to be a libertarian. You have to accept those ideas.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. I used to tell people if Christ would sully his hands with the slime of politics, he would be a libertarian. And I know some people took affront because they thought, oh, no, you got to be a Republican. And Democrats would say the same thing. And I was like, no, you guys are out of your mind. Read the book. The book is he put everything in a book for you. Can you read? Because he has the two kinds of stories, the beware stories. And then you have the behold stories. And that's all the Bible is a series of those stories. You beware of what this numbnuts did and look what happened to him, or behold. Look what this person did. Mm-hmm. Esther saying, and if I should perish, then I will perish. But the truth will out. And those kinds of things, those are moral stands. So I know when the Christians, they go, they tell me, well, you got to get church out of the government. I mean, absolutely. Right now, immediately. We don't want the Jehovah's Witnesses or the Mormons or the Lutherans, as I was raised, or the Catholics or anybody else running government. But I always remind them, but you cannot take God out. His name is on the deed. He owns the place. So you can deny him all you want, but he's here. But that's a whole different thing from religion. That is spirituality. It's morals. There is a moral foundation we all know, and I think we all know instinctively. When this country was totally anarchistic, which it's unfortunate it didn't remain, and anarchy, incidentally, is the lack of a need beyond personal self-governance. In other words, everybody behaves themselves because we know You don't steal other people's stuff. You don't steal their wives. You don't break their things. You don't impinge upon their ability to express themselves. That's what it really means, is that as long as you don't harm another person, their property, their rights, you should be able to walk down the street with your head up and not fear a tap on the shoulder from the local flatfoot. I mean, it's incredible. But today, as you probably know, every single individual breaks the law at least 39 times per day.
Wow.
Per day.
Yeah, and a lot of people, they interchange anarchy with chaos. They think anarchy means chaos. And, of course, it doesn't. It just means, you know, what you said it means. And, you know, I think a lot of people, if you look at the benefits of an anarchist type of society, people aren't so prone to impose their will on you because they have to use their own resources to do it. If, you know, someone might say, I don't like the idea of that guy over there smoking marijuana. But, you know, if I wanted to stop him, I'd have to go over there personally and do it. I'd have to get people involved. I'm just not going to bother with that. But if outlawing other, you know, activities that you don't like is as simple as putting a check mark in a box like it is now, then people are more prone to do that because it doesn't really take any effort on their part to do it.
Right. Well, they're trying to use the force of government to impose their will, how they think their neighbors should live. And unfortunately, where they're not thinking it through is that their neighbor would have an equally valid point of view to say how they should live. I mean, they might want to have those naked parties in their backyard. And you say, you can't have those. Well, who are you to say they can't? You know, and who are they to say you have to? That's it. And that's the fun thing. I remember meeting J.D. Hayworth the first time I met him. He was still a very large man. Before he slimmed down, he looks great comparatively. He actually looks like an athlete. But I remember him coming up and putting his big bear paw over my shoulder, you know, and he kind of looked at me, and I had been talking about the Second Amendment as being purposely placed as backup in case the First Amendment didn't get the job done. And he said, oh, he agreed, and he loved it, and he was going to steal my line and all that kind of. Trent Franks did and never gave credit, by the way. Trent Franks, now you heard me say it. That's right. He's a stealer of lines. But when J.D. Came in, he said, you know something? He said, "You Barry, you and I, we can handle our firearms. But, you know, the average citizen." And before he finished that statement, I said, J.D., that's what every one of them told me about you. and it backed him up because these guys don't understand. When you turn it back, what they're saying, if they ever listen to themselves, it is startling. I mean, it really is, because if they heard somebody else saying what they just said, they would reject it out of hand. But since it was coming forth from them, it was truth, and it was power, and it's just an amazing thing. I may be considered rude by some people, but I'd rather be rude than a liar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think the idea is to be politely lying than to always putting the truth out there, even if it's not something that someone would want to, you know, can easily accept right away.
Exactly. And people, they don't like me referring to the government schools as the welfare schools, you know, because they think, well, no, my school's going to deliver me a world class top shelf education through the welfare system. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, that's the whole idea. When there is a welfare system, you immediately create an upend market for somebody to do better. And that's why you will never, ever have equality in a government welfare school. We shouldn't even have the welfare schools. In fact, in one of the plans now, I've had actually a couple of people from Washington calling saying, well, exactly, give me the rest of your thoughts. They're trying to steal my thoughts, and I don't care because I just want to see that it gets implemented. And there is some hope coming from Washington, where my idea was a cyber school. See, Arizona is one of eight states that has a requirement in its constitution to provide free or nearly free education. Now, that's gone out the door with Crow's ASU and all, and now it's unaffordable by so many people that it has perverted its own purpose. And so I was saying, well, hey, we'll give all the kids a laptop, costs us a couple of $100. We can do cyber learning. If they want to learn, fine. If they don't, then don't let them disrupt the class. And better than that, now we got the swine flu. You don't want a bunch of these little antisocial animals who parents don't care enough to educate them themselves in together with other ones who haven't been inoculated, do you? And it's okay. They put a needle into your kid who might kill them, but it's okay because it's an acceptable loss. People don't understand, and they don't generally like that kind of straight talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, I might be a little flippant, but there really is some serious thought behind it. And it would make more sense to have a competency test, because our concern, shouldn't it be, if there is any governmental concern in education, shouldn't it be, what do they end up with? What are they capable of? And how much knowledge do they have? And how much can they reason? Shouldn't that be the only concern of that we can figure on our progress in providing public education?
Oh, absolutely. And you put out there a lot of contradictions, you know, that go along with the government, you know, that the government putting out contradictions, rather.
Putting out the fires of contradiction is what he's trying to say, folks.
Right. I'm saying that you're letting everyone know about the contradictions that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely true. And if the government is to have any involvement, it basically should be what you stated is that I would obviously like to see them out of it completely and let parents decide, you know, what kind of education that their kids are going to have. Am I going to teach them at home? Am I going to send them to a school? And when I send them to a school, am I going to pick the school that I think is best for them? And the schools, you know, right now they have no motivation to improve their curriculum or anything like that, because, I mean, what happens if you don't like the school? So you transfer them to another school in the district. Big deal. They still get their money. You know, there's these special interests in education that seem to see that their point is the end of it. Education, the end is the education of the students. The end is not jobs for teachers. The end is not jobs for administrators. So the goal should not be to promote the quality of jobs for teachers or promote the quality of administrators' lifestyles or anything like that. The end goal is to provide education to students. And then all the other stuff is sort of secondary, and it falls into place and becomes better because of the competition, because the focus is on what the end is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with making sure people had access to knowledge, but if they're not going to avail themselves of it, you don't want to drug them up, because that drags into a whole nother problem, the drug problem in our schools, and it is not street drugs. I mean, when you've got studies that are showing very clearly that 3 to 5% of the young boys, and they just talked about boys, I don't know why, but that was what the study came up with, were actually in need of Ritalin or Prozac or something to calm them down, 3 to 5%. Well, then why is it that 15 to 17% of the boys in school, by virtue and by order of the school administrations, are on Prozac and Ritalin? What the hell are we doing? I mean, this is crazy. And then you try to explain to a kid, this is a good drug, this is a bad drug. No, all drugs are bad. You start messing with your body chemistry, you're an idiot, as far as I'm concerned. But the reality is parents will accept it because the politicians say this is good for them. Some parents don't. And parents end up in jail because they call them child abusers because they're not poisoning their kid. And they're going to try the same crap with this flu stuff. And yet it kills people. It's putting poison into their body. And they're trying to force inoculations. And then what do you do? Where is your loyalty? Are you a parent? Are you a community member? Or are you just somebody who follows orders from your loving, caring bureaucrat?
Well, it's the idea of elevating the opinion of someone who is in a position of authority. They have the shiny government badge, so that means what they say means more, and it carries more weight. And I remember a study, and I can't remember the person who did it. It's in Mary Ruart's book, Healing Our World, and it talks about some scientists got together and brought some volunteers in, and they had someone in a room, and they said, we're going to do a pain threshold test of some sort. And so what they did is they had the individuals, the volunteers, go through and you know, go higher and higher levels of pain, and they told them, keep going. This person who's screaming, he's not in any danger. He's not, you know, nothing's going to happen to him. There's no permanent damage, to go ahead and do that. And so they had other people who were posing as volunteers kind of prodding them on, come on, go higher, give him some more. And people wouldn't. Very few people would. But when it came to the people with the white coats saying, "Go, no, no, this is he's fine. He's most of the people would. They would continue to go and cause that pain through the system because someone in what a position they saw as a position of authority was telling them it's okay to do.
Right. Yeah. And that's a famous study is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And they were actors, by the way, sitting in the electric chair.
Right.
They were getting electric shots. And yet people turn, they crank that dial all the way up. And incidentally, they weren't told, they weren't so patted on the head saying you're not going to hurt them. Mm-hmm. In fact, they thought you really could hurt them. And these people believed it. I mean, they were cranking them up saying, oh, yeah, you get them. We want them to answer this way. Mm-hmm. And until they do, Just give them a little extra, a little extra, a little. And they kept turning the dial up. And they thought, I mean, these people were prepared to kill their fellow citizens, is apparently it. They did the same thing in the prison guard studies, where they took a bunch of college kids, just a bunch of college kids getting high, hanging out, you know, having a good time. Well, they made them, they assigned them to be either prisoners or prison guards. And just for a 24-hour period, there were literal beatings going on in the situation because the people took themselves so seriously. Oh, I'm a guard. I can get away with anything. I am the law. You know, and it's amazing that the psychotic effect of power that people have is when you tell them, you get some official who says, okay, I'm appointing you as a head street sweeper. You know, suddenly, you're not only the sweeper, you get it clean, you do a good job because you're a nice guy. But the next thing you know, you're going, hey, to everybody else, don't walk on my street. You're getting it dirty. Hey, don't. No. I just clean that up.
Right.
And that's where you start seeing this power thing and the misapplication of the law. It's like the people who say, if we knew everything about everybody all the time, we could solve all the crimes. Well, maybe so. You have to have confidence in their intellect, but I don't. But if they did, at what price? At what price do you end up being a valuable, productive individual who can flower or blossom and live to your own potentials?
Well, it ends up being the idea that the purpose of life is for the benefit of everyone else, and I don't believe that's true. I think the purpose of our lives is to live our lives and be happy and be productive and pursue our own interest. It's not to pursue the interest of others. It's not to be a sacrificial being for their benefit.
Well, and that's it. It's you got to respect people. Would you go into Congress as a servant, or are you just gonna be our shepherd? What are you gonna do?
Well, I'm not going to try and make decisions for people. I would go in there and try and repeal laws that exist and make it so people can be more free. And not because, of course, people can be free on their own, as you talk about declaring your independence, but removing government restrictions from people who are trying to declare their independence.
There you go. And that's what we do here on this show. We'll be back right after the break for the final segment with Nick Coons, Libertarian candidate for District 5 here in Arizona. You want to pay attention to this young man and listen. Go back to the archives. We'll be back. This is Barry Hess on Ernest Hancock's Declare Your Independence.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Man. And we're here on Ernest Hancock's Declare Your Independence. This is Barry Hess sitting in on my final day. So tell Ernie you want me back because you don't want him. Come on, it's Ernie. He'll scream at you. He'll call you names. I don't. Well, not often. We're here today with Nick Coons, a Libertarian candidate for District 5 here in Arizona. He's telling us a little bit about us, and I'm going to turn over we've got a five-minute segment. I'm going to turn it over to him. He's going to tell you why you should vote for him, why you should participate in the voting process would be Ernie's thing. But why? Why would you be a good representative of the people? Do you believe in the Constitution as the guiding light?
Well, I don't know that anyone should necessarily participate in the voting process. If they want to, then I would say definitely vote for me. There's not going to be anyone better on the ballot in District 5. If you think that the voting process is broken and you don't like to vote, then that's fine too. Primarily the reasons that I'm running are because, first of all, if I were to get elected, I would like to repeal a lot, to just spend time writing bills, repealing previous bills that are intruding on our lives, that where the government thinks they can make decisions for us. But really the reason that I'm running is because I get to talk to people. I get to educate. I get to be on radio shows like this one and let people know what I think. Let people know that there is an option out there for self-government, that we don't have to rely on some central authority to tell us what we need to do, how we need to live our lives, who we can associate with, how we have to spend our money, how we educate our children, what kind of health care we need, all these things they try and tell us. And we really don't need that. Those are things we can figure out for ourselves. And you know, you asked about the Constitution, and as someone asked me a couple weeks ago, you know, how would I differ from Ron Paul, or would I, you know, agree with him the same? And, you know, basically my response is that I think he's too much of a constitutionalist. I think the Constitution gives the government too much authority. It's not that I would overstep the bounds of the Constitution. It's that I don't think the Constitution restricts the government enough. For instance, earlier in the program, we talked about the idea of taxation as theft. And I would oppose all theft, not just, you know, a little bit of theft is okay and we need to reduce it so that it's smaller. We need to get rid of all of it. But in Article 1, Section 8, Congress has the authority to tax. So the Constitution, unfortunately, you know, doesn't go by any kind of guiding principles. The proper role of government is to protect individuals' rights and to protect them from the initiation of force and fraud. And by doing that, not themselves initiate force or fraud. And the Constitution seems like while a Constitution setting out what government can do seems like it's a good idea, it seems like at this point it's an arbitrary set of rules. There really is no way to objectively bind government to the Constitution. It's all subjective. It's all up to interpretation. So, you know, I think if we were to have a constitution, we should have some underlying principles in there. The ideas of non-initiation of force and fraud, non-aggression. This way, if the government oversteps that, it can be seen very objectively. And so my ideas with running for Congress are to put these ideas out there, to let people know what options there are and that we really can do have self-government.
Oh, fantastic. And folks, that was Nick Coons, Libertarian candidate, District 5 here in Arizona. I hope you'll look at him. Give him a look-see, and consider your vote if you're going to vote. This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock here on Declare Your Independence.